organization of order, we will promptly commence at 8 o'clock. And I'm Regan Allen. I'm the Standing Committee Chairperson for Community Safety. To my left, I have Mr. Wasim Matthews, our procedural officers. I will allow for brief introductions from the members and then directly over to the South African Police Service. But please feel welcome. I understand that this is a continuation of our previous engagement towards the end of last year. And again, thank you to the Provincial Commissioner. We are delighted that you are here, ma'am. Thank you so much, General. Over to the members.
Good morning, Lorraine Botha.
Good morning, Ayanda Barnes.
Good morning, Raisa Owen Fuho.
Good morning, Ferdinand Christians.
Good morning, Chairperson and all the members. I am Lieutenant General Yulisa Matakata, the Provincial Commissioner of the Western Cape Police. And I'll introduce to my left hand side Brigadier Foske, who is responsible for organizational development. On my right hand side is the Deputy for Crime Detection, Major General Viri. Next to him is the Deputy Provincial Commissioner for Policing, Major General Manu. And to his right, we have Major General Nzamane, responsible for human resource management, is a Deputy Provincial Commissioner as well. And to his right, I have Major General Fick, who is the Deputy Provincial Commissioner for Asset Management.
I'll allow for members at the back and guests to also introduce themselves. I first note the Ombudsman.
Good morning, it's Lieutenant Colonel Khrie from SAT.
Thank you. For the record, I note one apology received from Member Gillian Bosman. I also note an apology that Member Kama will be joining us shortly. The context, again, as I stated previously, is to deliberate on the detection services, and it's a continuation of our previous engagement regarding the annual report for 2017-2018. The context is obviously provided in terms 2018-2019. It's obviously provided in terms of section 206. Please allow for a moment of silence. For we understand that the men in blue, the officers, continue to put their lives on a risk on a daily basis, and for those that have lost their lives during the period when we last saw you, may we have a moment of silence. Thank you. Members, we are following the same procedure as previously. I'll give directly over to the South African Police Service, who will, in addition to the annual report from pages 160 and onwards, provide a presentation at the start.
Thank you, sir. I would request Brigadier Foske to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I don't know if you want to maybe take the maybe these As indicated previously, this is a continuation of the session that we held on the 26th of November, where we will deal with Financial Program 3, which is Crime Detective Service. You'll see here, just indicated at the bottom, so we'll deal specifically with the Detective Services Program, which is the key responsibility of the DPC Crime Detection. In this program, we have a total of 35 performance indicators. You'll see in terms of the indicators, the green indicates 20 performance indicators which were met, which equates to 57%. 14 indicators were not met, which is 40%. And then one indicator indicates an improvement on last year's figures, but did not meet the set target. If I go to the first performance indicator, the same table as on the previous occasion, the table on the graph on the left, the graph, the blue indicates the baseline, which was therefore what was achieved last year. The middle graph indicates what our target was for this financial year. And then the outcome or result is in the far right, which will be in the third graph, or either be indicated by a red or a green. The first one relates to contact crime and the detection rate for contact crime. Just certain aspects to note. The target was 55.09. We did not achieve on that target. The result was 53.91%. And I think some of the contributing factors as to why it was not achieved is that specifically we had in the Western Cape a total of about 24% of all our murders were gang-related. And in many of these cases, the ability to detect is impacted by the unwillingness of witnesses to give statements. Furthermore, around contact crime, which assaults also forms a key driver within, we have high withdrawal rates with regard to regard to assaults, as in many cases complainants withdraw cases after a day or two. Thirdly, victims and complainants of robberies and aggravated robberies in many cases are not in a position to provide descriptions of suspects or any possible leads that could be pursued. Then the detection rate for property related crimes. You'll see the target was 17.73%. This target has been achieved. I think there's some positives and best practices related to this, which includes the utilization of our criminal record center at crime scenes, where we've been able to make a number of positive linkages through fingerprints. We also have in many communities, vigilant communities, and also the assistance of private security companies that have assisted in identifying suspects. Internally, we have what we refer to almost as a bit of checks and balances, where we have 24-hour brought forward to and from court inspections. We have before closure and monthly docket inspections. And this, in many cases, serves to direct and guide the individual investigators. The detection rate for contact-related crimes is 47.82. The result was 49.21. Again, this target was also achieved. The contact-related crimes cover two primary offences. It's your malicious damage to property and your arson cases. You'll see there as a further indication as to why we've achieved around that detection rate, because we've formed a specific task team under the Provincial Detective Services, so that is focused specifically on dealing with the high-profile arson cases. So we have a dedicated capability or capacity that's dealing with that currently. The detection rate for all other serious crimes The target was 35.81. You'll see there was a performance of 34.87, so this target was not achieved. When we analyzed this category, we picked up that 74% of this category constitutes theft, which in many cases is an opportunistic crime. And in many cases, there are no further leads to follow up. Furthermore, impacting on this rate was that 14% of all thefts were withdrawn by complainants. And one of the primary reasons is that your goods or your assets are misplaced, but they're found afterwards, and then they initially registered as a theft, but then it's withdrawn after it's discovered. Detection rate for trio crimes. Trio crimes in essence cover our carjackings, business, house robberies. You'll see there, the target was 20.47. There was an achieved rate of 20.31. In reality, I think in many of our house and business robberies, where one would expect technological aids such as CCTV to be useful, I think we have certain challenges around the utilization of that kind of technology. One, so our suspects are smart, they cover their faces when they execute these activities, and secondly, there's no particular standard for CCTV, so you can have a system which is one of high quality, where you are able to do facial recognition or identification, and then there are cheap and nasty CCTV systems which make it virtually impossible for us, irrespective of the availability of the technology. It makes it extremely difficult to identify anyone with the quality of those images being so poor. Then detection rate for crimes that are committed against women. This target was 82.59%. There was an achievement of 81.61%. Again, this target, there was a slight underachievement on this target. And upon further analysis of these figures, we discovered that 20% of reported cases against of crimes against women are withdrawn by the victim. And when we dug further into the analysis, we picked up that the cases where predominantly those are withdrawn against by the victims are where it involves assault. And then the reality is that many assaults that go to court are finalized alternatively. They call it an ADR process, which will be neither a conviction or a not guilty verdict. What's referred to as a type of a mediation process. It's called the alternative dispute resolution process. What we've focused on in terms of attempting to address the issues around detection rate, we've further intervened at units where we've considered the performance to be poor. We've conducted weekly tracing operations in an attempt to trace the wanted suspects. And then from a process compliance and system administration view, we're monitoring cash flows on a weekly basis to ensure that the necessary accused are charged on the crime administration system. The detection rate for crimes against children, the target was 76.03%. The achievement was 74.01%. Here you'll see that the target was not achieved. 65% of the reported cases are sent to court. Upon analysis, we detected that 2% of rape and related sexual assaults are closed as false. And then further, one of the challenges that we do have is due to the age of victims. They are not always in a position to make statements. And before those cases can be considered for enrollment, it goes through another process through the forensic social workers for assessment to see whether there's a state of readiness for the possible victim to be in a position to testify or stand up to the rigors of a court process. The next one relates to serious crime, but it excludes crimes dependent on or police-initiated crime. So it covers the entire 17 community priority crimes. The detection rate or target was 38.21. We achieved a target of 38.16. And this is a culmination of all the categories above. So there's a slight underperformance in terms of when you add all the categories together. And again, the failure to achieve targets set for contact crimes and definitely has a negative impact. As indicated previously, the issue around gang-related witnesses, who are often reluctant to provide information and give statements, impacts broadly on this category as well. Crimes dependent on police action for detection. This is in actual fact things like your police-initiated crimes, so it's drug arrest, possession of illegal firearms cases. These are typically what you'd find in that category. The target is 99.85. We achieved the result of 99.84. And there's a couple of factors, because in a police-initiated offence, there's a direct arrest, so you want to be as close to 100% as possible. So I think there are two aspects. One is more of an administrative aspect, where cases in the evening of the last day, when nobody has yet been charged, impacts on the result, because you have 48 hours to charge. So if you arrest him on the 31st, and it's cut off at the 31st, he may not yet be charged on the system. So that's more of an administrative issue. And then also we have detected and we've addressed it where possession of illegal firearms cases, by implication means you must be in possession. But there are incidents where we picked up where possession of illegal firearms cases are registered, but there's no party charged. It was not found. It was found maybe abandoned. And now you're opening a possession of illegal firearms. So that's an administrative issue that we have to address in our environment, because it can't be possession. Then detection rate for criminal conduct during public protests. The target was 44.65%. We've achieved a result of 38.54%. And there are a number of factors upon further analysis. One is the linking of persons to specific unlawful actions during protests is a challenge. CCTV footage is often unclear. And then probably one of the key drivers of that is that witnesses in many other cases that are partaking a very public protest and are therefore reluctant to cooperate with SAPS. When one looks at the next aspect is around, you can see there we dealt with detection rates, now we're going to deal with trial ready rates. These are cases that are considered to be ready for trial. In other words, the investigation has reached a point where it can be enrolled in court, it's ready for prosecution. You'll see there the contact crimes, the target is 83.45%. We achieved a result of 87.5%, which means the target has been achieved. And I think there's a couple of best practices within the detective services that have started to bear fruit. One, there's a far greater focus being given currently to court dockets. And yes, a better relationship with prosecutors and prosecutor-guided investigations ensures that dockets are ready for enrollment. And then again, the instruction that branch commanders and group heads must verify that dockets are trial ready prior to being sent to court. The trial ready rate, the second one, with regard to property related crimes, the target was 84.6%. We achieved a result of 87.47%. And again, I'm not going to repeat the same, but it's the same principle. It's a focused approach around court dockets, and it's an improved relationship with your prosecutors, and then again, it's internally a better command and control being exercised by your branch commanders as well as your group heads of your detective services. And the result speaks for itself in terms of that specific trial-ready rate. With regard to contact-related crime, this is your malicious damage to property and your arson cases. You'll see the target was 85%. The result achieved was 89%. And again, the three factors are relevant to this as well. One, more focused approach. Two, working relationship with your prosecutors. Three, internal command and control enhanced by your group heads as well as your branch commanders. With regard to your trial ready rate for all other serious crime, this is your typically your thefts, your shoplifting, these kind of things that fall into this category. The target was 83.02%. A result of 86.67% was achieved. Same three factors that one must take cognizance of. Then with regard to our trio crimes, which is our carjacking, business, house robberies, the target, and I think these are positives because it simply means that we're in a better position to secure convictions. Our target was 79.98%. We sent, on these serious offences, we sent 81.69% of the cases we sent, of these cases were trial ready. And again, across the board, the three aspects are around the focused attention, the prosecutor assistance, as well as the internal command and control that's been exercised. I think on the trio crimes, our serious offences, as well as against crimes against women, you'll see it's the same factors that have come to the fore, and that's a consistency which has been applied for all these 17 community reported crimes. You'll see on the next one, which touches on crimes against children, the target was 82.08. We achieved a trial ready rate of 86.86. The same three aspects that are key and critical in terms of ensuring that our trial ready rate has improved. And then this one is a combination of all the above cases. And you'll see there the target, and what is positive is that you'll see the previous financial year we achieved a result of 82.58%. The target we had raised to 83.3%, and we were just over 4% up on that from the previous financial year. So So I think that's one of the parts, because that this is a culmination of all the above cases. So you can see there's a 4% improvement in our trial ready rate over the last year. The trial ready rate for CDPA, or crimes dependent on police action. These are the police initiated stuff. Remember I referred to illegal firearm cases, possession of illegal firearm cases, your drug arrest. These are the police initiated possession of drug cases. You'll see there again, the previous financial year we were sitting at just under 74% in terms of our result. We set a target of 74.8%. And what is pleasing is that we achieved a result of 81.4, which is about a 7% improvement in our trial ready rate. Again, I think that's, you'll see, that's the best practice, I think, in terms of those three areas we identified: the attention to court dockets, the prosecutor involvement and assistance, and then the internal command and control by our officers. Those three things I think are key, and there is a continuation of that into the current financial year. With regard to criminal conduct, public protest, you'll see we had a target of 91.76. We achieved a result of, there was a result of 92.2, and again, the same aspects impacted on the improvement which we are now seeing. If we go, so we've covered detection rates, we've covered detection rates, we've covered trial ready rates, now we can look at conviction rates. You will see that the target was 85.64 for conviction rates. For contact crime, we achieved a result of 86.43 for conviction rates. And I think that's an improvement of about 1% on the previous financial year, and there has been obviously therefore an improvement in the quality of investigations, thorough investigations, more credible witnesses, and then I think key is also the involvement of the National Prosecuting Authority and an improvement in the working relationship. The conviction rate with regard to property related crimes, you will see there, there's a 92.38% was the target. There's a 0.002% decrease to 92.36. So there was a marginal decline in the conviction rate. And upon analysis of the reason, there are issues around witnesses not attending court, and therefore cases then are, that are subsequently withdrawn by the state. For contact-related crimes, again, this is your malicious damage to property cases and your arson-related cases. You will see that the target was 90.09%. We achieved a result of 93.27. The target was achieved. When we analyzed the conviction rates, and you'll see on this specific offense there's about just over 3% improvement. We saw that the state had introduced and implemented what we'd call admission of guilt fines for many malicious damage to property cases. So it's a quicker and more immediate resolution, and that has led to an improvement in terms of the conviction rate. There's also an improvement in the quality of certain of these investigations, and again, the relationship between SAPS and the MPA, which has been a highlight over the past financial year. The conviction rate for all other serious crimes, again, the target was 97.46. The result was 96.97, a decrease of about 0.5% in terms of the conviction rate. And one of the key reasons under that all other serious crimes is that the conviction rate for theft other has declined due to contradictory witnesses and insufficient evidence resulting in not guilty verdicts, specifically with regard to theft other cases. With regard to trio crimes, which is your carjacking, business and house robberies, you'll see that we've moved up by about 2.5%. It was 84.05%, the conviction rate for trio crimes. It's now gone up, 84.64. My apologies, it's gone up by about 0.6%. So this target was achieved, and I think there's some positives with regard to this. Our expert evidence from our Criminal Record Center, as well as our forensic science, linking accused to crime scenes has aided in the securing of convictions. And then, even though in certain cases the CCTV images are poor, but there is an availability of CCTV at least. And then these images, fingerprints, and then we also have new technology that we've introduced, such as touch DNA, which is aiding us in securing convictions. And it's evidence which is very difficult to dispute. The conviction rate for crimes against women, again, this was also achieved. There's an improvement from 87.12 to 88.44%. And the reality is that many of these cases are being investigated by our Family Child Sexual Offences Units. And a vast amount of time and effort is being invested in preparing witnesses and victims to testify in court. The IOs, or investigating officers, are attending court proceedings and are providing support and are ensuring the availability of these vulnerable victims at court. Then over and above our family child sexual offences, within these specialised capabilities that we do have, there's a further degree of specialization which we've introduced in the family child sexual offences, where we now have specialist capability within a specialist capability to investigate offences involving serial rape. Then conviction rate, crimes against children. You'll see that the previous year our conviction rate was 85.5%. That has dropped to 82.9%. And I think we had a look at the analysis around this. And some of the reasons for that are that minor victims, the reality is they are vulnerable to cross-examination. That's why there's a fair amount of effort, specifically by our family child sexual offences, to prepare them, to prep them for court. But the reality is they still remain vulnerable to cross-examination. We find that it's specifically in cases where there are sexual offences that they are more vulnerable than in others. And then the non-sexual offences, and many of those that relate to things like assault, the reality is they do not become a conviction because the courts are inclined to go forth through the mediation process, which is the ADR process I referred to. So it's not a guilty verdict, it's not a not guilty verdict, it's settled, they call it settled otherwise. So it's an alternative dispute resolution which is intended to mediate between the respective parties. Conviction rate, crime dependent on police action for detection. The target was 98.51%. We achieved a result of 97.77%. I think the reality is that these are police initiated cases, so therefore the presumption in possession of drug and possession of firearm cases, I alluded to it earlier, there is a presumption that you are able to link the suspect to the recovered item. I indicated the found in a house, you need to indicate or be in a position to prove that it was belonging to a particular individual, not that the person could simply have been in the house or in the vehicle. And then, this is also something that impacted on our conviction rates. The third point, I think there was a 2018 September court judgment, the Constitutional Court judgment, which ruled around the cases involving possession of dacha, specifically small quantities for, I almost said for personal enjoyment, for personal usage. And this judgment related to the use and cultivation of cannabis. It resulted in the courts disposing of many of those cases, withdrawing many of those cases, where it involved small quantities of dacha possession cases. And that impacted, obviously, then on the conviction rate because they were withdrawn. Then the conviction rate for serious crime, this is all for all your 17 community reported crime. You will see the target was 91.66%. We achieved 91.83%. And I think the primary categories where we were aided is in the contact crime and contact-related crime, where we achieved our targets quite significantly. And then also with regard to what I indicated previously with regard to the admission of guilt fines that were paid or given in the malicious damage to property cases has aided in the enhancement of the conviction rate. And again, once again, the NPA and SAPS are currently having a positive working relationship. Then criminal conduct during public protests, the conviction rate. Again, you'll see this is a positive. We had an 80.9%, 95% target. We achieved significantly higher, 86.67%. And this is directly as a result of the cooperation between NPA and SAPS, because at times these cases were perhaps not always given or viewed as serious offences, but the NPA and SAPS are prioritising these cases currently. Over and above that, you'll see, as in with where we've created dedicated capability to deal with serial rapists, we have also provincially under the head of crime detection, we've created a provincial capability that is dealing specifically with the investigation of these kinds of offences. Then your process compliance rate for detective services. This relates largely to our own internal management of our systems, whether people are being charged, whether the cases are carried over, brought forward, signed for, etc. It's a way of checking the levels of internal control through the systems that we have. You'll see we have a compliance rate of 96%, which is the target. We are about 3.5% under, at 92.27%. This is an area which requires improvement. And we've subsequently introduced a number of checks and balances. So you'll see that we are conducting audits on the age analysis of dockets. We are ensuring the updating of our administrative systems month end. And then also the time is opening and reopening and closure of brought forward cases is being monitored at branch level and by provincial detectives. The next one relates to the percentage of DNA samples, commonly referred to as your buccal or buccal samples, buccal samples, taken for all Schedule 8 people that are arrested for Schedule 8 offences. You'll see here the target that was set was 50%. achieved a target or a result of 8.04%. And I think, just to clarify, I mean, it's due to specific aspects. One, there was a national shortage of the DNA or buccal samples throughout the country. And this was as a result of a non-availability of the contract. September, I think last year, a contract was put in place for all investigative aids, including the pediatric kits or what is commonly referred to as the rape kits for adults as well as children, as well as the buccal samples, which is your mouth swabs or DNA kits. So that has been put in place, and currently I think we have stock at all stations, and we've got probably about 30,000 still on back order in terms of kits. So the last reporting period, 18-19, there was a problem. We have hopefully overcome that. Then, the total number of wanted persons arrested. This is people that are wanted on particular cases, and have been wanted, and they are circulated as wanted persons. You'll see we had a target of 10,063, which we wanted to arrest for the past financial year. We exceeded that target, and we achieved a target of 15,681. Again, I think one thing that is a positive practice that has impacted on the ability to trace these number of wanted persons is that we created dedicated teams focused on dealing specifically with these wanted suspects. And again, over and above that, these dedicated teams were set weekly targets, performance targets. And they were compelled to account for underperformance on a weekly basis. And that was throughout the province. The detective services, I can tell you there was some harsh words, and we had weekly video conferences that the detectives held with all the detective coordinators to drive this process and achieve this kind of result. Over and above that, we established an advanced profiling team that could assist with the location of the identified wanted suspects. The next one relates to the percentage of 76s that are sent to the Criminal Record Center, that's the fingerprints, sent to after the suspect is arrested. The percentage of 76s sent to the Criminal Record Center, the standard time is 3 days, has to be sent within 3 days to the Criminal Record Center. We have a target of 100%. In other words, because this is a suspect that has been arrested, we want to ensure that everyone's fingerprints has been sent to the Criminal Record Center to confirm identification. We achieved a result of 97.76. You'll see it's indicated as in yellow, which means that we did not meet the target. However, there was an improvement on the previous financial year. We've attempted to address the failure to send 100% of our 76s to LCRC by ensuring that we have Criminal Record Center members available over weekends to capture the receipt of the fingerprints. It has been addressed. However, over and above that, we're attempting to catch up with technology. So we've introduced a system which we call at 149 of our 151 stations. We've introduced a system called PIVA, an automated mainframe system, personal identification verification system. which has assisted and helped to automate that process. It gives our station, instead of where that's very much a specialized capability at a criminal record center, which is located in various parts of the province, it gives each and every one of the 149 of the 151 stations the ability to directly access AFIS. In other words, they can take your fingerprints and they will be able to determine whether you are a person of interest or a wanted person, and then also gives direct access into HARNESS. HARNESS is the Home Affairs identification system, so we can determine not necessarily have to have be a person of interest. We can determine your identity even if you're a foreigner as well. So that's good, and it localizes and decentralizes that kind of ability and puts your stations in a position to function at a better level. So I think that's one of the positive initiatives where we now have direct access into HARNESS, the Home Affairs database. Next one relates to the number of circulating wanted. So these are the number of suspects being sought that have been circulated. We had at the start of 2018, you'll see on the blue, we had 22,000. We had 22,162 circulated wanted. These are people being sought that were circulated. We had 22,000. We set the reduction target was quite aggressive for the last couple of years. I think we set a 25% reduction target. In other words, those are people we want to arrest so we can cancel on the system. We set a target of 16,622. Positive is that we were able to reduce that figure from the 22,000 to 15,385 circulated wanted that are still sought. And the reality is that we've achieved this by constantly updating the database to accurately reflect the sought after individuals, the dedicated teams that are running and tracing, and many of them running 24/7. And then also, just as a positive, you'll see when we commenced with this kind of monitoring and focusing around our circulated wanted, we started at 2016. We had 44,399 people that we were, I want to say, hunting. And we've been able to reduce this figure through the dedicated tracing teams, through the weekly accounting, and through the dedication of our principal members as well as our detectives that have been leading the tracing teams, we've been able to reduce that figure as we stand at the end of the last financial period or reporting period, we're standing at roughly 15,385. So we've reduced by almost 30,000 circulated wanted over the last three financial years, and I think that's due to their hard work and dedication. Thank you. I think
thank you so much for the presentation. I sincerely trust that no one on the wanted list is in this room. But we are roughly 9 months into the term, and we understand that regardless of where we sit today, we all want to create a safer Western Cape. We want to make sure that we are able to live a productive life, but also to see how we can jointly work together. Hence, I am delighted that SAPS is here today again, and we encourage the robust discussion and input. We will allow for members to now engage and deliberate on the annual report, pages from 160 onwards, but also specific reference to the presentation and comments that were made. I trust that members find that in order. I will now note those keen to note Member Christians, Member Barnes, and Member Botha in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Last time we met, I quoted a couple of numbers, and I could not give the source, and I've got the source, I hope, because Brigadier Forstler said that it was reports, and I've got the substance here. With regard to detectives, regard to the Department of Community Safety in the Western Cape, they had an assessment of the detective services in the province, and the assessment said that of the 2,785 detectives at 151 police stations, 45.8% had not received basic training. 91.7% had not received specialized training. So that was also reported in the media, Times Live, and then Premier Alan Windey also then also spoke in the Cape Times saying it's shocking that 57% of our detective commanders and 48% of our detectives has not undergone appropriate training. And then just further to that, it was also reported of the 875 cases monitored during this assessment, 380 dockets just did not arrive at court. I could not get SAPS's response in the media because they have assessed. I just want to know, has this improved? And we also believe in that report that detectives sit with more than 200 dockets and the norm should be 50 to 60. That is according to the report. I just want to ask, because I've noted all the positives, but I'm also, in your internal management, do you address this? Do you look at this? And because you can do all the work, but if your detectives is not properly trained, we're going to have a problem. All the hard work put in, we're going to have a problem. So the question is, did you reply to that assessment to the department? Because I cannot find it. And secondly, did the position change from when we received it? That was, let me just give you the time, that was reported on the 23rd of July 2019 and the 24th of July 2019. If there's any improvement and what was done to address these cases. Thank you, Chair.
Member Barn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm kind of covered with Member Christians because my question was also on the part of the detective, but I think it seems the two of us came with a common purpose here after reading our report here. However, let me just add on to what Member Christians was saying. On the report, Brigadier, I think the last time we've seen you was on your birthday. You were here the whole day. We kept you for hours. Today, I think we're going to go a bit softer. It's the beginning of the year. Also, on the same note, I would like to welcome the Commissioner. Yeah. And on top of that, she's female, so I feel good. And yeah, something very good for me. Welcome, Commissioner. We are very much enlightened to have you also here in the room. The question I wanted to add on to Member Christian was on the measures, if there are measures put in place. I heard Brigadier said earlier that with the detectives, they were video conferences that were made to improve. Is that the permanent solutions or are there other measures that are already put in place? Yeah, my second comment would be on the crimes against women and children. I think ultimately our goal is to keep everyone safe, and I think crime of children has become one of our priorities. I heard earlier that there's a task team that is set aside to deal with high-profile cases against us, and has the department thought about itself to do something like that, put in place a special task team to deal with crimes
relating to women and children. On that note, I would also like to, Chair said, we must just speak on the report, but I must also add something that was enlightened. If there's excellence, excellence must be acknowledged. I was at my constituencies, like all of us. I've seen excellence. The reason why I'm saying I'm acknowledging, I'm a commissioner today. I've seen beautiful excellence in my constituency where drugs is coming up. I'm coming from a rural constituency. So drugs is the in thing in the Karoo now, but I've seen excellence in the warrant officer working after hours. Me as a politician, I was thinking, member, what do I do? How do I interact? And I went to the police station, all of the police stations around there, the smallest police station where I'm from, Maritzburg. I found a wonderful warrant officer, Adonis. She's female. After hours dealing with young people, program youth policing, I don't know youth policing what, but they are dealing with drugs. So that's excellence. One should also highlight, although I'm also not satisfied with the detectives, then at the end of the day, you also say there is some excellence. It should be encouraged. It should be acknowledged. But we should start working very hard on the detectives because it's something that you can see. It's vigilant. It's not. It cannot be hidden. It's not a matter of this conference room. But at the end of the day, there is hard work that needs to be acknowledged. I would, on that note, just thank you for allowing me to speak, Jay, out of my report.
It is a new year. That's high praise. That's no pun, people. Member Botha.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I want to echo Member Barnes in terms of the Commissioner's appointment. I want to ask, in terms of the detective services, how many of our detectives are on employee assistance programs currently as we are sitting here? And are there, of those that are on the employee assistance program, how many of them are on long leave pertaining to that? I also want to, you have in the report your prestige award, so I'm welcoming all of those, and especially those who come from my area, so there are quite a few, so congrats to them. Then I want to know, in terms of the crime against children, and you say of those that are settled, that cases that are settled via ADR, in terms of the percentage that you are quoting, what would that constitute in numbers? And then, Chair, if I can follow up after the responses to particularly the children crime question. Thank you.
Member Kama.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Two questions, Chair. I just want a clarity. You know, when you spoke about the reduction, I think it was a slide before the last one, reduction in the wanted person, I think you had a 22,000, and then you had a 15,300, you reduced it to 15,000, and the difference there was about 6,777. I just want to get a clarity in terms of the difference when you talk about that and the other slide, because in the other slide you were talking about arrested wanted persons, and I see the numbers are different. On that side they are higher, you are talking about 15,000 something, but when on the side of reduction. So I just want to get the clarity in terms of the difference in that. And also, maybe it might be linked to the question that Member Botha was just asking. I want to check in terms of the work of FCS. I think there's been challenges, especially on the side of the communities. Because in part of the slides, you mentioned challenges of young victims that are not ready to make statements or present themselves before court. Now, I want to link that to check how has been the work and how do you monitor the work of FCS and leading to conviction, your conviction rates in that regard, because many, and are they accessible to at least reasonably to all parts of our province? That's it. Chair, lastly, sorry, Chair, in terms of the work of your anti-corruption unit, I think in the report we heard you mentioned that 18 members out of the 45 which were charged, 18 members were convicted. Now I want to get an understanding. I think that was under that reporting year where you say 18 of the 45 members were convicted. I want to understand as to what is the status of the 27. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you to the members. Just for the record, we will allow input and questions from members of the public as well. But let me just latch on to Member Khama. Brigadier, I remember the last time we spoke and we engaged was regarding the FCS, and there were X amount of leased buildings that fell under the FCS unit and the 26. And latching on to Member Khama, seeing that we are a new committee, allow me to ask this. In terms of the FCS, if I can get an understanding regarding the family friendly rooms for children that speaks directly to children going there and being accompanied, if that is being assessed on a yearly basis, if it is conducive for actually to be deemed as a child friendly room, but also do we have a logbook of sort where there's an FCS unit and it's catering for 5 stations, for example. Then if a call is made to FCS and the time that they arrive at the station, do we have some type of logbook to say that a person that is being assisted via FCS isn't waiting at the SAP station for 6 hours prior to being helped? And if there is 26, is that the best model, seeing that those properties are probably also leased in that same vein? I hope that makes sense. But also I'm partly covered for that first round, but on the drug arrest, you spoke about crimes dependent on police action and detection. I noted the 199.84. And in understanding that the runners and those that are using drugs, for example, are often caught, and can we get an understanding of the amount that comes from SAPS where a runner is potentially paid in order to purchase, but he is then it won't be unlawful for him? Do we have an understanding of the scope of that across the province so that we can make sure that we know the drugs are being sold at a certain property, but what is being done to target the high flyers, those that are actually selling the drugs and destroying communities? And then lastly, if I can get an understanding on, you spoke about the trial ready rate for contact crimes and you mentioned arson cases. And we know here in the Western Cape, our rail line has been brought to a halt as a result of arson. And can we, is there any update that you are at liberty to give us at this stage? Just to, because a strong message needs to be sent that SAPS is doing everything in their power in order to send a strong message to those that are caught in that regard. That's all for me for now. Yes, Member Botha.
Thank you very much. Also just on the crimes against children, Chair, thanks for allowing me. Those cases, Brigadier, that you said that are that 2% that is constituted as closed and false. I just want to check with you if any of those cases has landed on the table of the Ombudsman.
As you are writing, sir, let me also say that Member Botha took the liberty of mentioning those from her area that received accolades. We are also delighted to know that Mr. Brandt is no noted within the accolades for the year under review. Well done, sir.
Thank you, Chair. We will all respond to the questions. We won't leave it to Brigadier Foske. But I think where there's relevance to any of the deputies, they will respond to those questions. But I will allow probably, maybe we start with the deputy for detection to respond to the first questions from Mr. Christian.
In terms of the first question, when it was raised before, we tested that against what we had on hand, how many cases we sent to court. Our conclusion at the time was that too much was extrapolated on the basis of too little. The sample itself of 875 was not sufficient to support the conclusion and generalize that conclusion in its scope. So that was the first problem. If you think about it, for example, if you read the report up there on page 88 and you look at the fact that we received a total of 467,087 for the whole year, and roughly the bulk of that is usually in the period up to July, in actual fact. So it's slowing down before, and the fact that we sent 62,054 cases to court, and the sample of trying to choose 85 cases to extrapolate on the basis of 85, only in a certain set of courts that people attended for a very limited period of that case, because the case is long. Go the first day, go the second day, draws out for a year or 2 or 6 months. The problem was with the basis on which too much was concluded. So that's the first thing. I think the point is about the detectives. What the figure was and still is back then was not the correct figure that you have. The figure is 3,182. Okay? And if you think about structurally in our thing, just to clarify for it, we have 151 detective branches, that is being there at a particular station. Out of the 3,182, there are 2,678 members who are allocated to those branches. And then the provincial detectives, where all the specialized units are, FCS and all of these things, are 504 members. But however, when one starts asking questions about the ratio, okay, there's a concern that enters into the picture when one calculates that. Going back to page 88, the 4,776,087 cases, one must understand that when one aggregates, one is using a station with three detectives in the rural areas and aggregating them across the board with Kayalicha with a big detective branch. So what you get is a skewed reflection of the generic result. You might say the dockets are an average 120 per detective. It is entirely false. It might be higher in certain stations. It might be extremely low in stations where there's two detectives and where they receive 10 case dockets in some cases in a week or in 2 weeks. So there's a challenge with that. So one of the things that we raised back then is when it comes to such type of research, we would prefer before the findings are made known that that people come to us and we actually talk about it, and we can perhaps even enrich that research with the methodology that we do use there. So that was on that particular report. General, you said I should speak on that. Is there anything else you want? Okay. Let's come to the issue of drugs. The first thing, the consequence of the judgment has meant that, you know, in the course of our operations, we stop and search people on the street. We do find dacha, in whatever amounts, on the street. I'm not talking at home. And all of those cases are withdrawn in court. It's withdrawn in court when the magistrate asks when the defense put forward that the person who was found on the street with a dacha, at three stops or four stops, was actually on his way to go and smoke a dinner. That immediately throws up case. In other words, they were not intending to use it in public. They were intending to use it at home. And they were just carrying it with them. Okay. So that is one of the challenges with that case. If you go to Goodwood Court, you go to any magistrate's court now, you'll see that the defense raises that and we can't argue the contrary. Exactly, in fact, we can't prove the contrary. It's very difficult. So that is the challenge with the drug cases. Now, particularly the Dacha. Now let's come to the challenge with the chemical drug cases, your mandrakes. The quantum of proof required there, the only basis of proving that that is indeed mandrakes or cocaine or whatever we call it, is a report certifying that it is that comes through a chemical analysis. Now, if you look at our conviction and you look at break it up into parts of the year, the average lab report takes us 3 months sometimes to get. So your last 3 months, when we have the highest rate of arrests, let's say our festive season programs when we go out and arrest, those reports will likely come to us in the new financial year. So it will not be factored into the statistics of this year. So that is one of the challenges that influences a carryover as a result of lab reports. The other one, the question that was asked about detection rate and crimes against women and children. Now there I want to make a point about rate of concluding those cases. It was highlighted that a child victim, for example, first goes through a forensic social workers and to prepare them before we can even think of taking the statement. But luckily, those forensic social workers are in there. So the delay, it's not as simple as somebody coming into the station when taking the statement and then sometimes takes a month or two, depending on the maturity of the child and the process involved. But there's one overriding factor that affects everything in a rape case. It also affects contact crime also in general, whether it is robbery, whether it is sometimes. And that is the issue of what we call, we touched on a touch DNA. Now, those of you who don't know, if you touch this particular surface, we get a sample. We get it for housebreaking cases, we get it for... Now, it affects the detection rate fundamentally. Because the speed of analysis of that sample links you to the offense. It determines the time period in which we can link you to the offense. Now, one of the challenges we did have was a contractual one, which was not mentioned in the report, but it related to the chemical reagents that are used in the testing process. There was a contractual issue with it not being available for, a year or two. So you would not rely on that evidence to take your case forward, and you would have to slog the longer way to do it, to link the individual to the plea. That affected the rapes, that affected some housebreakings, that affected all of this. So a lot of the results that you see here as results of that came through the other old foot slogging work rather than that which was quite a lot more labor intensive than getting a forensic answer in 3 months' time. So that's one challenge. The other challenge with the contact crimes in terms of the detection rate. Okay, we find a firearm is used. We want to, whether abandoned or not, we want to link it to a particular series of cases in order to, maybe we have a suspect in case B, but we found the firearm abandoned, so now we have a murder weapon potentially. And now one of the challenges we had over the past year and a half has been that the system that must draw this linkage, which is called the IBIS system, our ballistic system, was down for a considerable period of time. So I would arrest you with a firearm. You might be the same person involved in 8 other murders in the gang world in particular. But now I'm unable to link this firearm because of the IBIS system being down. So those are some of the challenges that would affect how many cases I can take into court or whether I can take it to court. And even if on one firearm I'm waiting for a long time, I'm sitting with that problem in terms of linking it to whatever shells I find on the scene and those things. So those are some of the practical problems that detectives face. But with the resources that we do have, we are still able to achieve this result despite those circumstances. Those challenges, as indicated by the report, are being corrected. Our buccal sample issue was a major thing, but when we ran out of that, we can't take the swabs, we can't get the results of the tests. But even if you had all the buccal samples, your DNA analysis would still be delayed in terms of that. So I hope that answers that particular question. About the training issue, both FCS and detectives in general, our detectives all go through what is called a ROC course, which is a basic course in the beginning. It is not basic as in basic 20 years ago. It's a lot more advanced than what basic was 20 years ago or 25 years ago when I did a detective course. So it's a different course. It covers all the disciplines. It does cover a bit of specialized training, because what is built into them now is training around POCA legislation in particular. So it is one of the modules. Not that they get an expert understanding, but at least they get the basis to work broader than just the single docket, the single theft, the small case. They are beginning to be prepared in their training for organized crime investigations at the seminal phase. So that type of training is being enriched now. It is changing. Our detectives are also exposed to the international environment, them to us also. So, yeah, there is an investment in training of detectives. I think the issue, I think, that we might sometimes have a problem in any situation is scale. And scale is influenced by resources. It's influenced by the frequency with which these courses can be given against an unknown number. That's what I'm told is the crucial thing with detectives. We're dealing with students that come out, that must go through a probation period that we want to get to detectives, and then after that period we must get them trained in the specific basic course. So those are some of the factors that does influence that. The ADR numbers, we unfortunately do not have that available at this moment, but we can follow that up, General, and give the specific, all those specific things outside of the report, the real cases I want to speak to. Now, firstly, they are not arson. Let me explain to you the thing. We register what we call the MITP, and we register in terms of the Criminal Law Amendment Act, we mentioned the tampering and all those particular charges which give us much better sentences. Yeah, on the infrastructure. But they are not arson for the simple reason that arson can only in our law be perpetrated against a fixed structure. Okay, not a moving structure. So if the train plus station burn, then it's a different matter. So I just wanted to clarify that particular point. We have had convictions in there. One of our first convictions was a man who burnt the train because he was going to be fired that day because he had received three warnings about it being late, and the 6:30 train about arrived at 9 o'clock. He lost it and then he burnt the train. I think he went to prison for 10 years, I think, effective, if you combine the other one with that. We had a particular disturbing result, although we must respect the decision of the court. There was a 14-year-old boy we caught on the Kales River, that Mulder's Flay line. And after sitting in court and listening to what the magistrate said, it was clear that all of us, as the government, was at fault. The boy explained that he left the train because he had been late twice before for his exam. He's an A-grade student and he had fallen to a C. And the result is he got frustrated and he burnt the train. The magistrate castigated all of us, including who are responsible to see the trains on time so that these things don't affect him. That boy, he got some anger management. That's the ADR process, some alternative resolution. He did some anger management thing. We have another case of a few boys. The one of the two that we caught in Cape Town, that is still an ongoing trial. but there are indications of other factors involved there in terms of possibly some initiation process involving instructions from a 28 gang person. But those are the things. So it's the train burnings have become an amorphously motivated thing. There's the organized stuff. There's the individuals who do what they do. There's the vandals like the boy who do what they do. And but by far, in terms of rail infrastructure, our greatest amount of threats and where we have the greatest success together with the province here is around the copper. It's around the signaling sabotage station, what I call sabotage, although I don't want to use that word in law. It is around, for example, the theft of the cameras at the different stations and those type of equipment. And we're getting success in those terrains against organized criminals in particular. But in terms of organized syndicated crime involved in train burnings as such, we haven't had that. We've also had a case earlier, but that was two cases so far, right in the beginning on the Claw Valley to Simonstown line, where we had a suicide. Decided to commit suicide by burning himself inside the train. But that is like I say. But our organized crime focus, and we have a dedicated provincial unit, is not only on the arson or the where there's fixed structures or on the MITPs, and it is on the other things that affect our rail infrastructure much more, and is of much more higher impact than an actual burning of a train. Cost in terms of disruption in particular. So that is on the train thing. On terms of the 8 corruption cases, we've got, he was correct, in last year, 18 out of 45. We've already exceeded their numbers with the rest so far. And in terms of the remaining, they are still ongoing court. They're still in court. So it would be difficult to comment on them. You are welcome to monitor them through the
court watching briefs.
Yeah, to the watching briefs. Mm. And I suggest in that period you try and let your people spend a longer time. Okay? Now the issue of detectives in your report that are not always there. Firstly, that is a challenge, and we take disciplinary steps where necessary. But it must be understood that a detective is not required to be there, often by the prosecutor's instruction, every single minute of every single court day for the duration of the trial. Usually there's an intense period in the beginning when you have to be there, but as things get in motion, you should stay there. On the issue of witnesses that was mentioned, it still remains a challenge that one of the factors that affect witnesses not arriving at court is, besides the issue of them not wanting to take off work for a theft case or for something, is a factor that, even take our contact crimes, our high contact crimes, besides the fear factor, you take to the high court in the trial, for example, it's quite an expense to get there. Now, it's one thing to say this Department of Justice is going to give you bus fare or whatever they're going to give you for that expense. The issue is how safely you get there. Now, unfortunately, it's not a police responsibility. We serve a subpoena, and you must get there. Department of Justice is supposed to take care of those particular issues. We offer to you sit with you administratively and take you through the witness protection process application or that particular process. If you refuse, it's out of our hands. But as far as possible, we the detectives, where it is possible, because we're running between one detective, between 5-6 case courts in some cases, where practical we do assist with the prosecution to actually go and fetch people, witnesses, and bring them to court where practically possible. Because a single detective runs between the average of 4 or 5 courts in his week, besides picking up new cases at the investigator, you must understand the practicalities that are involved there. But we do attempt to do it, despite the fact that it's not our job. It's the Department of Justice's responsibility to ensure that witnesses are in court. We serve subpoenas. That is one particular issue. The crimes against children that are closed as false, I wanted to just get an idea, Chair. Was it the reasons, or what was it, or the follow-up, or what was it?
Yeah, if it's not satisfactory, if it's not satisfactory due to the complainant in the first place,
okay,
if those cases are closed and false, is there of those that lands up at the ombudsman?
Okay, I think the ombudsman would close there. I know some of the cases logically that are closed undetected might land up there. I'm thinking now in particular of, but that didn't land up necessarily with them, but with a complaint to, that came to us about a Mariesburg case. Okay? But the one of the challenges was that the linkage or the evidence of the younger person to disclose and how the person disclosed the suspect's action. So in the initial phase, it could not be. But what we did afterwards, okay, there was also the issue of the availability of a social worker, and we had to get them rapidly to that point. We self-corrected that particular process to get the matter back on the roll, and when we eventually arrested the person. So yes, it does happen. I don't know about false. False is when it's entirely a lie, in which case we open up a perjury case against the person who reported. That's fast we possibly can. Okay. I hope I covered everything, Jim.
Are the perjury cases that spread out of that?
Okay. The accessibility of the FCS unit was a particular question. Maybe I while I was listening, I didn't hear that.
I was just asking, in following up, you said now about you open up cases of perjury.
Yes, we have done it.
You have.
In rape, where false rapes have been reported, we have done it. Okay. But in terms of the accessibility of FCS and the response time, let's start with the FCS units. Our FCS units are not only located in Cape Town, but it started off, there's a Mitchell's Plain, there's a Nyanga, there's a Khayelitsha, there's those things. I think one of our challenges would be our more rural areas, where we have a single unit, let's say, that covers the George or Otterington or period, but then covers a much more wider span, geographical span of jurisdiction. That is definitely a challenge in terms of the accessibility of people there, but it's a matter of location. However, in those situations, we try and do like a roaming service to go check, but it is not ideal. Let me make it clear that it might be very ideal in the urban environment, where you have a Nyanga FCS, almost less than 20 cases from a Mitchell's Plain FCS and a Khayelitsha FCS to handle the volumes. But the rural, it is not ideal in the rural environment. So in terms of location. However, in terms of numbers, it's just in last year, 2 years past, that we have had a challenge in Khayelitsha, where we arrested most of the FCS members on another corruption-related matter. So we had a struggle over the 2 years to actually recapacitate that. And recapacitating that, they receive a different kind of specialized training. We might all be trained detectives, but there's a certain, what aptitude test, I'm still thinking in 1970 terms, what? Psychometric tests that they undergo, and you might be the best detective, and if you fail that, you will never get there. So the pace of getting there is quite a challenge, and maintaining your presence there, because you regularly get tested, and you might even be sent back. So our biggest shortage challenge was Khayelitsha over the past 2 years, but we've regained our capability to deal with that. But it's not, I would not say we have all the ideal numbers. The scale of what we later find to be underreported also in some of the children issues, not so much the adults who are conscious with the Mtutuzeli campaigns and all those things. I'm talking about the children level. Well, probably if one is effective at that level in terms of more children speaking out, the schools being more accessible towards that type of detection, we would get to much more cases than what we actually have at the moment. Yes. Okay. Have I covered you?
Thanks, Shana. Thank you.
I think just in terms of a couple of questions that I will try and deal with. I'm trying to, technology is a bugger when it doesn't work with you. So the issue around the ADRs, the general also alluded to, I was trying to access the system to try and get an indication of that 8.5, the ADRs, which are basically indicated there, but I can't access, so you can give that, if it comes through, then we can give it to you. Otherwise, we'll respond in writing. And then the issue of the wanted here. So the two are a little bit confusing. The one is the wanted that had been arrested. There's a physical arrest. So that number will be smaller than the one where I indicated the 22 to the 15. That's what's still outstanding. So the one is the number of suspects we were able to arrest physically and charge, and the other one is the figure that is still outstanding, the 22 to 15, the kind of drop, if that is helpful. I think Stalin is right. We have not family-friendly, victim-friendly rooms at the 151 station. I think General Martin is going to respond to that one. I'm trying to see if there was one anything else that I had to respond to. General, if on the second one, I'll take
it. Thank you. Maybe Stalin Zamani, you can, if you have the answers to the detectives that are on the EHW program. If not, then we will also submit a report. I'm not sure whether you would have that. But maybe for me to add, Chair, on your question on the strong message that we need to also give out there on the rail environment. We had a meeting last week with PRASA as a collective in terms of the working relationship. And one of the issues we had agreed on that we should have a joint media briefing, especially to give an indication to the public about the successes and also as a message and to educate people in terms of the impact this is having in terms of the economy of the province and the country. So we did have that kind of discussion that we would want to have this joint media briefing. To educate firstly and also to send a strong message in terms of the consequences of this, where we've been having successes, people have been convicted. Maybe it's not coming through, but it's necessary for us and that we are having as a team, you know, a good working relationship in dealing with this issue. So that is going to take place. Janan Zaman, if you can assist.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chair. I think that General Vieri had covered us in terms of saying the kind of details that you need could be, provided later on. I think, and again, one would want to sensitize the committee that we would not give the details in terms of names of people, but we'll give you certainly, you know, the numbers and perhaps the ranks of persons that have come to see us with regards to EHWO because of the confidentiality around that, as well as persons that have been a booking of SIG in that environment. Thank you.
Chair? Yeah, absolutely. No names. We don't
yes.
want any names.
Yes, that is
standard. And numbers is fine. No, but no names.
I do know that.
I'm going to follow up.
I do know that Mr. Brandt will be leaving us shortly. But seeing that we are engaging for the first time this year and we want to create a healthy environment, is there any input or comment that you would like to make, sir?
Yeah, no, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I just want to thank the management of SAPS that we
for the time that I've in office that we can work together in this fashion. Congratulations also to the general, and I trust that we will continue to work like this in the future. The purpose of my office is to assist SAPS in identifying systemic issues. And perhaps I can just clarify the Mariesburg issue that was brought to my attention. The complainant have indicated in that matter that General Verrie has already been dealing with the matter, and we then agreed that it was a bit premature to start the investigation from my side, and that's and I'm happy to hear that SAPS has already addressed it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you to the Ombudsman. Whenever you need to depart, sir, you are more than welcome.
Can I be excused? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Members, any follow-up or input with regard to the questions that and the answers? Thanks.
Chair, if I can just ask, and I understand the general said, you know, the sample is too small to come to that conclusion. You see, you still have those negative reports in the media. You understand? And if we can just get what is the current situation when it comes to the training? You spoke about the rock course. Just to say, you know, because the perception that 50% of our detectives are trained is not a good perception. So if we can just get a report to say this is, you know, the state of detectives, and the report that I don't know if docs asked for a response on that, because I know the general said it will be better to discuss it before it goes out in the media. Because that was also, you know, that was also mentioned in our legislature from the Premier side. So those messages that go out is not good. It's not good for SAPS. It's not good for us. And now I sit there and, you know, we question those type of things, but we don't know the truth. Now I know the truth. You understand what I'm saying? So somehow, I don't know, and maybe, Chair, when we have the facts, we can maybe have a media briefing to say, listen, this is when we spoke to SAPS. This is what happened. Because you know, they've got a difficult task, and inaccurate information given to the public is very dangerous. And I don't like that, so that's why I say, if we can get the status of detectives, and if a community safety has asked them for a response, that if we can get that response, and then also get docs here to say, listen, you know, who did the sample, because the sample is not big enough, and the figures that was given was also inaccurate. Just that sense, you know, because we are here to assist and to see that we have a professional police service, and that is what we must present to the public. Thank you, Chair.
Member Kama.
Thank you very much, Chair. My follow-up, Chair, is on, I think the general responding to that question mentioned the issue of other detectives having too much workload, that it differs from area to area. And now I'm worried, because most of the time, not only in the police service but in government generally, you get to have a situation where the rural parts of the province get to be compromised in terms of our service. And this is not a SAPS issue. I think if Bans was here, was going to agree more, because he always talks about the rural part of the province. Now I want to see how often do we monitor and address the issue. You know, it might be that in a particular area there are only three detectives, and at the time they did not have really much workload. But now things have changed, because criminals have decided to move, especially maybe in your drug-related crimes, to move from this area to that particular, to operate in that particular area. Now, how often do we monitor that and address it, Chair, so that we ensure that we service the community as well then?
Member Porta.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to latch onto what Member Christians was saying. And I'd like to understand why SAPS, was ComSafe invited to this meeting. with regards to this briefing. And then I also wanted to ask the commissioner, and I'm latching onto my own question around the EAP, but now with a Bobby on the beat and the mistrust that communities have in the police, I wanted to know how would you instill the trust in communities around SAPS, and also to keep the bobbies on the beat, to keep them how do I say this? I don't want to say to keep them sane, but to keep them focused, rather. You know, what is your plan for that, and to instill the morale of them, and also with regards to the communities that they service.
Thanks, Chair. General Vere will take the question from Mr. Christian, and then and the one from Mr.
Okay, in terms of Member Christians, we do not only have one course we send people on. I'll give you some idea of the figures of people we sent last year, but it's not only one course, it's several courses, and I will try and explain that to you. The course I spoke about, the ROC, is a generic course, but there are several subspecialist courses that we send people on. So the figure I'm going to give you now for 2018 to 2019 includes that subspecialist course. In other words, it's new people going on that. Other people have been trained already, because this happens every year. So I'm only talking, I want to make it clear to you, about how many people we sent last year. Okay? Now, on all the courses, including in basic investigation tools, we sent 1,074 people last year. Now, it's not 1,074 detective courses. Our courses are divided into the systems courses, where you need to study the systems of the organism, or as the systems change, we have to send you regularly, the CRIM system, our IBIS, our CAS system has new functions, so we have to refresh you and send you back. So, for example, on the CRIM system, we sent 405 people. It's a large number on most of our systems courses because the technology and the systems changed, architecture changed. CAS course, 55. Vehicle circulation, goods and stocks. That's when we circulate the vehicle electronically. There's been systemic changes. We send about 144 back. Every year we have to do this. Vehicle crime investigators course, that's a specialized environment. We have some new people coming into our specialized unit there. We sent about three of them. We felt we need to send them on a basic course. Circulation system, that's again CVs, profiles. That's in a systems electronic course. We had to send about 67 people just to update that particular case. Sexual offense, of course, like I said, it's not a high turnover always. We send four people who are new to that environment. The basic crime investigative practice, now this is where it becomes this different basic thing. This is your basic level. So we send 74 people in. Bearing in mind, all the other courses that I'm telling you, these 74 people are still going to be doing continuously through their careers, the systems change. Family violence and sexual offenses, child protection course, that's also a generic one, about eight people in terms of new people. SAPS, SAP6 and Docket Progress Learning Program, new functions, the SAP, it's a systems course. You have to go back to refresh those skills. Introduction to electronic-related crime scenes. This, by far, has been the largest growth in causes over the past few years. because we started specializing in cybercrime investigations. Our FCS crime has a cybercrime unit, and all those things is required that we train more people, and we send about 161 there. It's a very expensive course. It cannot accommodate 500 people at a time. The lecturers are far and few involved in this particular environment, so the numbers that we could only send was about 161 last year on that. But we did send people before in the earlier years, and we will continue in the next financial year. Basic drug investigation course. This is mostly for the specialized, in your entry specialized drug unit course would be a drug investigation course. You will get a generic courses, but this is when you're dealing with syndicated crime, you're dealing with poker, we will do that type of. So that is literally what we did last year. But like I said, just to clarify for you, Bebe, that it's not about the detective training course only. Detective training course is not enough to keep you sharpened as the systems change, as new legislation requires POCA changes, the Criminal Law Amendments Act, it is last year. It's a totally new type of investigative training that we must bring as the law changes, different elements of crime that needs to be improved, and different investigative techniques that need to be sharpened. So that is where it. But in general, to tell you that we do have a shortage of detectives, it is true. We have a very large shortage of detectives, but somebody want to ask me, I wonder if we will ever historically catch up with this thing, because detective work is determined by the caseload that comes in. So if you commit 1,000 crimes tomorrow, 10 robberies in your particular area where we live, it's unprecedented to us. We must just add it to our thing. So how, we don't have control over our inward flow of work. It grows, it depends on what is prevented or not is prevented, right, in the detective environment. So you will never, I believe, especially in high contact crime environments all over the world, you will never have enough numbers to meet the anticipated inflow of cases. You see, there are too many factors that influence why you have 10 murders today and no murders for the next month in the same place. So those are some of the issues. So when one looks at this, there's a need to look projectively also, and when you measure what is required. You cannot work with existing ratios in relation to dockets that we got, because it changes fundamentally. Tomorrow we have a taxi war, and then we are totally off kilter in terms of the amount of dockets we see. So those are some of the things. I hope it answers that. With drugs, we do have specialized units at provincial level, and also all syndicated crime. So your problem of the station in the rural area addressing organized crime is addressed, because our provincial units move all over the province. We have a dedicated drug capability on all our major drug routes. George, in addition to the provincial office, the George route, Vriendal, that type of route down, and the Beaufort route. That's why we, in those areas, have a high dealing in drugs success rate and interception, because there are specialists that we formed out from the province to base themselves there to do the job there.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I will respond to the questions coming from Ms. Borden. First, about how am I going to instill trust in the communities in terms of concepts. I think what is important here is that we are able to really have a good working relationship with the communities and form these partnerships with communities. And yes, there are partnerships that are in existence, but there are areas where you can see the relationship is really disintegrated and there's no trust in the police. And that indicates that there's a problem internally in the organization. And if we are getting those kinds of complaints and reports, we have to do something about it. And I've always said, even when I had an engagement with the ombudsman, that, look, your work is strengthening the organization, where we are areas you look from maybe different lenses and some of the things we might be missing. But what is critical is that it is going to assist the organization to improve in those areas. Same with communities. If they give complaints through different ways and means, it's for us to take those complaints seriously, investigate and address those issues that are identified. And that is where you instill, you know, the trust, and you bring back the trust between yourself and the communities. And I think for me personally, we should not be shy to listen to communities. If they say there are police officers who are corrupt in this specific station, we should believe them, because they would never just say those issues, just raise those issues, and investigate those matters where we get the information in that regard. Again, some of the complaints are around our visibility. Maybe we're not seen to be there and doing the work that we need to be for the communities to feel safe. So these are the areas we need to improve on as the organization, being visible, and as well as from what we're dealing with today, our investigations, where crime has taken place. And that is one of the areas where communities would complain that I've not been informed about my case, I don't know what's going on, or I just heard it struck off the roll or something like that. So, yes, we have an understanding there are cases that take quite a long time in court for various reasons. But what matters to our communities and complainants is the turnaround time in us dealing with those cases and investigating them properly for those cases to really be successful in court. And those are areas, obviously, we look into in the organization, which are critical to the communities. And again, the importance of those partnerships and the relationships with the communities that we're serving. Now, when it comes to our members, to keep them focused and the morale, to keep the morale high, one of the issues I realize is critical to members is the presence of us, the senior managers, there with them. I think it goes a long way, even if they, as you call it, saying the Bobby on the beat, for us to be there and support them. And to see some of the challenges, because for me, I believe that if we are, whether it's operations or they're working in the communities, us being there, we can see some of the challenges that they're confronted with, and how therefore do we address those challenges. And I think it motivates them to see we are there. We have interest in the work. We are there to support the members. We have been talking to the program in the organization, the Employee Health and Wellness Program, that is there to give the necessary support to members as and when they need us. So those are critical things that keeps members motivated. And we might be seen as this organization that is semi-militaristic, but we also should be a caring organization to give the members support and be there for members at any time when there is that need. So also show appreciation for the work that is being done. I think thank you goes a long way in the kind of work we're doing. You know, it's not necessarily incentivizing by giving monetary, you know, incentives and so on, but just thank you every time, even when they come from the shifts and they've been, to thank them for the work that they've been doing, and keep them motivated if necessary. So you need that kind of leadership also at different levels of the organization, because we know we are this kind of organization, and if members, like our kids, you constantly criticize them, they internalize those things, I'm bad, I'm failing, all that. So you need to always balance that. Yes, reprimand where necessary, but motivate and appreciate the work that is being done. It goes a long way in keeping the members motivated. I think maybe those are the few things I can say, but in all that we can do, if we are not having the community with us and understanding and supporting the work we're doing, it's not going to be a success story for all of us.
members. It is now 9:55. I'm going to take one last round from members. If there's any follow-up or questions pertaining to the presentation or the report, and then we will hand over to self-management to answer, but then I will also open to the public. I see member Van Vogel and then member Christian.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to support the point raised by member Christian on the perception out there that more than 50% of our workforce detectives are incompetent. How are we going to rectify that perception out there? One of our members talk about how you're going to build trust in our community. So really that's a concern for me, because we are blaming the police force by saying because of those information, that's why we have this high crime rate in the Western Cape. So we really need to rectify these stats of this information. And my last point, Chair, I also want to congratulate our new commissioner, and my prayer is that the Lord will lead her in a team to higher achievements that we as a community can feel your presence. So thank you, Chair.
Member Christian?
Chair, just accolade from my side. Last year we had, can you remember, we had, and it's now pretty the ombudsman has left, but last year we had a briefing on the abalone in the Overstrand area, and we're going there engaging with communities soon. People were sending me videos of the one group that was arrested was about 68 people at once. So you know, there was, you know, remember that was the dispute, is it SAPS or what is the thing that the ombudsman gave us, the thing. So people were sending me now videos how people has been arrested, and they say most of the guys was from the Eastern Cape and those type of things, but I've never seen so many people arrested for abalone. The people sending me the videos all the time, so congratulations on that, and because, you know, just the information we received was that, you know, if you put that abalone poaching into the economy of that area, it will make it will generate billions and billions of rand, and well done for that. It was a great concern, but we are still going out there engaging with communities, with the police and with all the municipality and all of that. But it was really encouraging to see all these arrests of, because it's happening on a regular basis on Pringle Bay, Pearly Beach, all the beaches that you can think on the Overstrand. And I was very, very, I don't know how many police, because this is the police, but so the people that were arrested, but I don't know how many police you need to arrest all of those people, but a job well done, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate our engagement, that we are able to then foster that relationship, because yes, we are members, and at times politics can get in the way, but we would want to create that environment where we can engage. For example, if I look at the amount of SAPS members and our population, and I was in a meeting on Monday, and we heard that there's only 3 officers at the one station, and it speaks to, is there under-resourcing? Do SAPS feel that there is under-resourcing? If I remember correctly, Brigadier Foscale, there's, is it 7,000 extra that we are getting soon? Yes.
1,100.
So it's always welcome. So if we have that engagement instead of a shouting match or a... So I do appreciate it. Seeing that it's only 2 questions and basically a comment, I will now note Mr. Khabir, and it is... Okay, I note Mr. Khabir.
Thank you, Chief. I'm here on behalf of the Progressive Professionals Forum, of which I'm the Provincial Deputy Secretary. I have a few questions, and thank you for the honour of presence of our generals and leadership of the Western Cape South African Police Service. In terms of the General Veery, you mentioned that particularly in the Dacha with a, you know, you catch somebody or you catch him in possession, he's on the way to the, he's on his way home, and so on. So while you've caught him in possession, he's, the defense raises an argument that is very difficult for to be prosecuted. The question is, how many of those cases actually happen in terms of defense of, or argument of defense, or prosecutor withdrawal, or a lack of detective work? That's the one question. The second question I have, in general, when it comes to investigative cases by detectives, before the case gets to prosecutors or to the court, in whatever section it may be, is there a review process by a senior commander or senior detective, or some level of an audit process to understand that the detective has actually followed up on the case? Or is it sort of the detective has a big workload, hold on, this one doesn't really look that appetizing, I'm going to kick it to the curb, send it up to the prosecutor, prosecutor will withdraw, I've done my job, I've checked the box, and you know, it's withdrawn for lack of evidence or lack of prosecutorial success. So, I mean, and in terms of that, is there an audit review sort of on cases by detectives? You look at the number of cases that have been kicked out in a particular station, right? And you look, these are the number of cases that have been opened or dockets that have been opened versus the number of successful prosecutions. Because that will sort of be an indicator in terms of a benchmark that, you know, you've got detectives that are adequate, and it leads into what Member Christians here said, that detectives who are passionate about doing their work, and yes, we can understand it's a rubber banding thing, you don't really know how much resources you need, it'll shrink and contract as the days go by and from month to month and week to week. But is there some level of follow-up to go and say a randomly audit what is happening, or does it go to a review and say, you know, on any before the prosecutors are handed the dockets on a Monday or Wednesday, whenever it might be, that someone else has a later set of eyes on there, or maybe more than one person say, look, okay, cool, we can go ahead with this or not. And then, yeah, I was going to ask you, the you know, there's this big deal made in this province, particularly about ratios, and I know that you've addressed it. But is there some sort of an algorithm that is used in terms of deployment of I'm just trying to get a sense of how staff are deployed to particular stations, and what is the sort of underpinning? Is it based on population density? Is it based on square meterage or square kilometers? That's essentially what it is. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Just to start with the Dacha issue, cases where you can only be prosecuted now, seems to be generic, if we catch you on the street with Dacha, 3-4 stops, if you were using it and smoking it while you were on the street. So that's a fail. Because use in a public place, not possession in a public place. However, let me say, if we intercept you on a truck with 1,000 kilograms of Dacha, then we can challenge the presumption of you taking that home to go and smoke that 1,000 kilograms. It's fairly obvious, and we will do that necessary work. And why did you transport from the Sotho truck full of Dacha to go and smoke in your house, in the house's river, and all those kinds. It becomes, I know it's a bit laughable, but actually you actually go through the motions of proving that it's how we build the Beaufort West cases, all these major transit cases. So yes, we can prosecute, but when you're coming to small amounts, we've even had a case of Chap Court, I remember the one with 3 parcels, and he was saying that's what he smokes average for the weekend, so he managed to get, it's about the use issue. Now, but the detective work comes in when you're dealing with higher volumes, when you catch them anything, at those cases we have a reasonable, we have success there. So that is, it is quite interesting to see if you're a police officer and you're
used to driving past this house where you arrested this person when the law was that, and the person is standing on the fence and smoking and blowing it out to the street. It becomes quite a challenge, but that unfortunately is the law. There's nothing we can do there in terms of the Dhaka issue in particular. Let me explain the checks and balance and the auditing that you carry. The first inspection all dockets that must go through is a 24-hour inspection. That inspection is to look at whether, let's say a drug case, whether gentleman has arrested somebody on Sunday and with that person is definitely going on to court on Monday. There's a certain degree of checks that must be going through the docket. We probably at some stage has to record that we are about to send the mandrakes or the tit to the lab so that they see there's proof of action. We have to make sure that the suspect is correctly identified. We cannot say Buta Jovi was arrested. It must be with ID number to make sure that person is before court. We probably, before that, have to make doubly sure whether it's a gun or a firearm, that it was physically found on the person of the person and linked to that person. Otherwise, that court or that suspect will have to be released and the case will be scrapped off the road. So that is the work that gets done. On a drug case, for example, when we caught, when we're possessing with chemical drugs and not dark armor. So that is a part. The 24-hour inspection ensures that the group head that he was referring to, who is a level of an officer under the branch commander, so he will have four or five groupies, they must do that. Now, over weekends, because they can't work 7 days, we have a standby system where detectives on standby have to come and ensure that that gets done. But it doesn't only depend on that detective. We have a provincial detective. So the whole province and all detective standby officers who are on standby on a weekly basis are required to check these things. That's one. But that's a 24-hour, ensuring that the docket is sort of administratively gets done before the real investigator comes. Okay? It's like a weekend scenario. But continuously thereafter, we have a broad forward inspection system in the detector. The group heads, you have a team of detectives under you as a group 50, and maybe a Mitchell's plane in one or 20. Your job is to monitor production in terms of the quantum of proof, the proof of whatever charges that are in the dock. So you're not supposed to look only at the administrative stuff. You need to read the statements and see what is outstanding, what needs to continue the chain of evidence to reach proof. Now, that is a much more intensive process that requires a certain legal knowledge and a certain kind of training to do that. And at the moment, while there's not specific training for group heads, it's primarily something we manage through experience. Okay, so those type of things is a challenge that needs that time. But the experience in terms of the result shows there is, does work. But that's a regular broad forward system, spring forward system, what we call it. Until the last level when the docket is finally investigated, it must be declared and certified by an officer, in our case the branch commander, and the group head, that this thing, after I've investigated for 2 years or 3 months, is now ready to court. Now, ready to court does not always mean arrest and there we go, and you go, we dump it on the prosecutor. It also means if we now send it to the prosecutor, if it's a bit of a technical issue, especially a strong circumstantial case, like we did with Stellenbosch, what's the boy, killed his own family? Yeah, Van Breda. We, people were wondering, why are we taking such a long time? We needed to build the efficient level of technique to prove the case that we did. And it had to be declared ready by our branch commander there, and then be served. So to court also means that process. It also doesn't only mean physically in a physical court, but going through the NPA with a view to charge the particular suspect. So that is a process where we must do the overall judgment, the branch commander, that this is ready or this is not ready. I'm giving you the system, the ideal world here, and a perfect structure with all the people to do these things, all trained, all super, and all up to date with the latest legislation, even what gets amended tomorrow, we will know it. But that's not the real world. But the system is what it is. We have quarterly inspections by the clusters, by the provinces, by national. It's a set menu of inspections that must be done, and all directed at this. Systems integrity is important. You know, we trained in a lot of systems, but garbage in, garbage out, what you put in. So we need to check that part of what you put into the system in terms of your individual production and your output and what we see recorded in the document. So that is a continuous process. It happens randomly. I do random inspections, province, so do branch commanders, so do even the provincial commissioner and those things. And we do it at times when not all the personnel are necessarily there, so particularly over weekends, like last Sunday, where it's just plain and called everybody in to check the week stockers for those particular elements. So it's quite a labor-intensive thing, maintaining our inspection system, but that's ideal. As far as possible, we try to achieve that result. It is not perfect. Tell you, you cannot necessarily, if you think of a station where there's only two constables who are detectives, for example, a warrant officer. A warrant officer is a warrant officer, is not, as an inspecting officer, considered. It must be a commissioned officer, a captain. So we now have to get the captain from the cluster driving 200 kilometers this way, 300 there, to ensure that the proper rank level of inspection is brought to bear, particularly in a rural environment. You will often find challenges where there's not this high concentration of senior ranking officers. You will have challenges with those particular processes, but it gets done. But the system is what the system is. Whether it happens everywhere to the same degree with the same intensity, no, it does not. Okay. Oh yes, perceptions of the failures of detectives. Let me tell you, as far as detectives, even within our organization, we are criticized for this. And it's fair criticism, and I'll tell you where it comes from so that you understand. The detective, we must guard the integrity of a witness or integrity of our case until it is called. And we often do not want to divulge any details about anything that would prejudice the long-term interests of the case. Yeah? Because it might be 2 years on this murder. You want to know, did we arrest the gangster? Yes. Okay? You want to know, okay, you arrested three and then we released one. Why did you release the one? Fair question. The evidence was not yet ready on the one. It doesn't mean the person is gone. As we build up the case on the one, we will add it later, but we're not going to tell you that. We are not to go to the public and explain that we released him because there was nothing now, but don't worry, we'll get something again. That's not the way, because we have to stand in court and explain our actions. Not visible policing, we. So there is a problem in our environment in general, and it's not only in this country, it's all over the country, where detectives are quite a closed book when it comes to releasing information. And even inside our organization, we are often fairly criticized. But I think there's space for, particularly on gang-related crime, we must be able to say that if the IHL start killing people as constantly as they do in Maryland, that we are doing something against the IHL. The only problem is by the time that you hear it is when you read about the conviction. For example, Rashid Stahi, we put him away on rape. It took us 3 years to conclude the case. During all those 3 years, we were criticized for doing nothing against Rashid Stahi, but we never said we are busy with anything on Rashid Stahi. The organized crime cases are of a similar nature. We never divulge until court. When you see all of them standing there, you'll realize that. But we never divulge, because we're dealing with very sophisticated targets. They monitor specific for information. They tap our cell phones. They do our detailed billing. They do a whole range of stuff to determine what we know. So we prefer to close ourselves in terms of the type of information. But I say it's not ideal. I think what is still needs to be addressed probably with us, the public, internally, is what type of communication protocols should exist, given those limitations. I hope it answers the question that you're
looking for. I think there's two things we'd like to respond to. I will respond to your question on the resources and the capacity, and then Brigadier Forscale will go back to the ADR. He's got the information. Yeah. So maybe for me it's just to indicate in terms of the resources and the capacity in the province, I must say it is always a moving target, because people resign, people leave the organization in different ways. And therefore, the more you try to catch up and you see you're adding numbers, but you are replacing numbers of those where we have left. So it is a challenge, and I've been briefed about it. As you indicated, that we got also the 1,100 students that came in December. It's not as if it's additional numbers again. You are replacing again those who have left in various ways, and it affects whether you have targets for each station that you need to meet based on the work study that has been done, but it is always a challenge. And therefore, we try by all means, you know, and appealing even to the National Commissioner with the pressure of having to resource Western Cape, that we need to find also other ways of making sure, with the current capacity of police officers, how do we therefore complement it with other law enforcement agencies in the work that we are doing? So we have to have that kind of balance and understanding. And unfortunately, the communities are developing at a pace that we can't keep up as a police. Those areas that were previously regarded as small areas in the work studies that were done 10 years ago, it's not even relevant anymore. So there's always this outcry from the smallest stations in the province that there's so much development that the police can't keep up. We need to always now constantly, there's so many of the requests, we need more police officers from the smallest stations and even to the urban areas, that your development is just continuously, you know, the communities are expanding. So we can't keep up. And that's the reality, but we are trying to really make sure the province is capacitated. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Just if I go back to the ADR question around the crimes against children, so I was able to pull that it's 8.5 of the SAPS 6. We had over 1,300 ADRs, and that's settled otherwise. And also included in that is so that obviously impacts on your conviction rate, and then there were also where there was no guilty or not guilty verdict, was a further 22 where the children were deceased.
To the Commissioner and the management, thank you so much for the engagement. The more I listen, I understand that it is complex, it's a multifaceted organization, but we are trusting that over the term that we will be engaging you more often, and that we will build that relationship towards playing our role as well with the Department of Community Safety to make this province safer. Growing up in Mitchell's Plain and attending Glendale, I'm totally aware of the various aspects that go along with growing up in a community like Mitchell's Plain. Hence, I feel that we are all here on the same page where we would want to make a difference. So thank you for your time. It's not your birthday again today, sir. But thank you, and it was a pleasure meeting you, ma'am. Members, I do want to say it is now 20 past. Do you want to take a 15-minute break? And then we can come back. Is that okay? But to Crime Management, is there any concluding remarks that you would want to make?
To thank, this is my first time appearing here with the management, but to thank you and also indicate that we really also appreciate the engagement. And as I indicated earlier, any engagement is really about the safety of the people of this province, and all our interest is to make sure we contribute to it. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You are excused. The refreshments in the foyer. Members, 10:35.